I'm Zena.
And I'm Renee.
Welcome to When You Just Want a Glass of Wine, a podcast dedicated to making wine drinking more approachable and inclusive. Join us as we decode the language and unlock the customs of wine drinking. Cheers.
Cheers.
Getting ready to do this one. It's been a whole like summer off, basically 2 months for this one. You two ready for this? What's in Renee's glass? All right. Here we go. Welcome to What's in Renee's Glass. Cheers, everybody. Cheers, cheers, cheers. There's a lot of clinking going on. We should probably explain what's
Happy
happening.
Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday. We have with us Nick Matarese, our dear friend who is helping us with this podcast today, and also Dave McIntyre, another friend. A lot of you know him from reading his writings either on the Substack or Washington Post. But today, right now, this episode is the first tasting of season two, where Renee gets ready to study WSET level three starting in mid-September at
September 8th
at Capital Wine School. So, Nick, I'm going to let you lead this like you did on that last time you had the ringer there with the left foot Charlie. I'll let you lead this mainly with Renee.
I always wonder if she looks forward to when I show up or if it's like, great, him and those bottles again.
Yes, that's exactly
right. I always look forward to seeing you on the screen.
All right, here
it's
we
just
go.
Just after the first hour. Once we've gotten a couple drinks, then she looks forward. So as always, you know, I think that it is so much fun that you are going through this progression of learning and certification and everything else. And this time, I know that we really stumped you the last time with something that it's hard to say it wasn't exactly fair. So we wanted to go a little bit broader in this case. I know that this is a grape that I have a little bit of an affinity for and a lot of history to. It is...
Ooh, the clues begin.
It is one of those wines that I think once you taste this grape, you do remember it. Mm-hmm. You see where it's used. You know a little bit more about its pedigree and its history. And it becomes one of those things that I think is a wine that everybody wants to share with friends at that point in time. It becomes an automatic, like, ooh, if you haven't had it, then you need to try it. If you have had it, then it becomes one of those benchmarks.
I want to say I could have blind tasted this and gone right away with the grape, but on the other hand, I know what the bottle is. So you go, Renee, start your class.
First of all, rude. okay, let's start. So it's a nice deep berry color, a little bit darker. Actually, I almost say maybe reflective of some age, but it's pretty red. It's got a pronounced nose.
We are taping this before I've had breakfast today. This is basically, besides water, the first thing I've drank today.
We've already talked about how much we love breakfast wine.
Breakfast wine. It's a good breakfast wine.
Okay. Going through, it's got good acid, which I like.
Mm-hmm. Super pretty.
Super pretty. It's a very, I would say it's elegant, but it's got some rusticity a little bit on the edges. That's what I would say.
I like that description.
I think the winemaker might need to use that description, as a matter of fact.
I'm getting more, let me think.
What do you think, Dave? You like it?
Yes, I definitely like it, but I'm not going to try to prejudice Renee in any way.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just following her coattails. She's the one who studies this.
She's the one who studies this.
I'm in front of three wine professionals right now.
That's all right. You're like way ahead of me.
Sweating.
But again, I think you always start with the right thing, and right. You're 100% on it when you say this is a very pretty wine. You've already pointed out that it's got some complexity to it and some edges that are really nice, and it is just one of those things that I think is... as you said, it's really, really pretty. You start, you know, with that. And we always talk about how, you know, the battle is won between how it looks in the glass and then that smell, you know, right. Because you almost want to like it and love it if it has already captured those two things for you. And this is one of those ones that, again, I think it calls out.
So it's one that I've described in the past, or not one that I've described in the past, but the description that I've used in the past is it feels red fruit going to dark fruit. To me, which is how I would describe it, which I'm not sure is the correct description for it. Acid, I mean, so I would think cooler climate. But also, there's a lot of fruit. Is it more fruit or dried fruit?
All right, well, we'll start with a really tough question. So obviously, it's red.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So right
and
now,
and it's not a blend; it's a varietal.
Is a monovarietal.
Yep.
Are you so? If we go through the progressions, do you want to start with Old World, New World, or you want to get to that one later?
My inclination was Old World, initially because of the elegance,
and the acidity.
And you get, it's that rusticity, I think that earthiness on the outside more than fruit. It's got a heavier, not heavy, but it's got like that feeling that's more a little bit more earthy, so I would say.
So which leads right to, again, we'll hold that one right here between Old World, New World, but let's try cool climate, warmer climate.
I would typically say cooler climate with higher acid. Mm. Okay. That's what you get.
You're nodding sore.
I'm nodding because it's delicious.
It's in a unique spot. It's one of those things that's a grape that grows in a unique place.
Or someone makes it unique.
Would I ever do that to you?
You would 1,000% do that to me.
Hello, Left Foot Charlie.
This is Sardinian red in concrete or something.
You should see what he almost picked for you.
By the way, I like Sardinian reds in concrete.
Well, I think that before we jump back to our questions, we should jump into maybe a little of the history, because we are a little biased sometimes. When you're taking the test, obviously you're not supposed to have any biases except for your own palate and what you've done. But in this case, we can cheat a little bit because it is me, and you know my predilections. And so I would not encourage you to always second guess yourself, but I would encourage you to go with what seems strongest. If you think that the path is right ahead, but there's these little offshoots that are jumping in your head, I would follow those little offshoots. I would say in this case you have the palate.
First thing you said, it's a grape that you love, so I wouldn't go to Italy immediately with you.
That's a little deductive.
That's what this is.
Yes.
Blind tasting is deductive.
Yes, but you also know Nick. But you know Nick.
I do too.
Well, I don't know Nick well as you two do, and so
Dave's disclaimer to make sure he doesn't get in trouble for future interactions. Yeah.
Well, exactly. But you said at the beginning that this is a grape or a wine that once you've had it, you almost certain to recognize it when you have it again. And I don't know that I had that kind of recognition, but I did have an initial impression that I'm still sticking with, but I'm always wrong when I do that. I've written it down, so we can...
I was going to say, that's perfect.
If I'm right, I'll tell you what it was.
But. You can hold it up and share with Zena.
It could be like a magic...
like password.
Yeah, we were in National Harbor this weekend, and somebody did a card tricks for us while we were drinking, and it was the most amazing thing ever, and they had to like hide the card.
You say also that it is... this is a single varietal, but that it is a blending...
It is a single varietal. Mm-hmm. It's often used in blending.
Yes.
And it does have a historical component to it also, which we'll reveal later.
Yeah, historical component.
Yes.
Give me these things. Okay,
what
I need
old
another.
World wine doesn't.
I think. So are we locked in on Old World?
Well, I think this is the, that's yours.
I said Old World, so either I'm.
Okay, so we'll be like Millionaire, final answer?
Yes.
Okay. Well, we discussed this, Nick, didn't we? Yes. When we pulled this specific wine for you, we discussed the fact that we felt that you might lead to Old World because of the winemaker and the sense of place. So you are very correct, and I think the winemaker would actually be ecstatic that this is a wine that you picked, described so perfectly, Old World and rustic but elegant. That's going to be on the back of the bottles.
And the only thing I will say, so it's not Old World.
Yes.
I'm sorry to disappoint you. But here's the thing for me. There is a little bit.
Scratch this out.
Everything that you said is right on and spot on. And had this grape hailed from the Old World, you would be 100% on the right track and where you're going. It doesn't though, and the only thing that gives that a little bit away to me is there is a little bit of alcohol. There's a little bit more intensity. There's a little bit more concentration, and it's the last one of those things that
concentration. That's exactly
that is the key that makes me go slightly warmer climates. And
it concentrates more on the fruit as opposed to concentrating on the terroir.
I wasn't following my thing of that because the first thing I did was,
So if you were to go Old World,
I should have said that.
If you were to go World World, where would you have been?
Well, now it's not. So now I'm like, my head went blank on all the old world things. I mean, I was using deductive reasoning with Nick that it would be like an Italian varietal that you would, then I started to think, I'm like, I'm not good with Italian blends and blending grapes. So then that would take me more higher alcohol, old world, I would think like Rhone, maybe, and one of those.
See, never second-guess yourself. You are doing a fabulous job of pegging where this, why this wine tastes like it's that. Now you just kind of keep going. Go ahead, Nick.
Lead her on.
You
have, with the exception of the old world versus the new world, you have nailed that part. You have gotten it down. So, again, let's go backwards a little bit in our process. Younger wine, older wine, as far as it goes.
I thought it looked like it had a little bit of age on it.
Yeah, I didn't look at the bottle.
It could be. I mean, we're also getting, I've got this mustard yellow behind me and an orange color, and Nick's shirt, which is reflecting a lot of color right now.
I might have to get a picture of that for the website.
It looked like at least a little on the edges that it might have a little bit of a darker, slightly rounding. So I would say it has a little
slight
bit of
rim variation. Yeah. But again, if we're to break it down, really old, moderate, or young wine, we're probably somewhere between the young and the moderate.
Yes.
Okay.
Sorry. Yes. 100%.
I love that nose.
I know, it's so pretty.
Okay, so now I'm thinking of a new world winemaker that likes to do old world wines with elegance and rusticity and intensity with a little bit of alcohol because he's in the new world.
Okay, I'll give you 30 seconds.
He or she.
Figure this out.
30 seconds. There's a lot.
Sounds like you're describing a Barbersville Nebbiolo.
Right. And by the way, we almost had a Barbersville Nebbiolo.
Have I had this wine before?
You have not had this wine before.
Have I had this varietal before?
You have had this varietal in a blend before.
You have had this varietal in multiple wines before, actually.
I don't know your entire portfolio of all the wines, but I believe that you have not had this as the 100%.
Right. I think that's probably why we led to this particular selection is just the fact that this is one of those ones, again, you don't often see it as a mono varietal. Yeah. It's usually
like a Graciano?
It's usually a building block. It's usually one of those ones that's added for specific reasons. And again, the historical component of it, this was a very necessary grape to allow the proliferation of the wine industry in certain aspects, to allow it to adapt to multiple climates.
I could tell you, Jimmy would love this. And there's this particular profile that I'm getting on this that I feel if I say would give it away.
Merlot?
There's a really... No, it's
what
not,
you're
actually.
I just flashed a Coon Wand.
There's a very specific flavor profile in here that just makes me think that he would just love this wine.
For me, it's always been one of those... my head goes to a cigar wine.
Mm-hmm.
And the ability to be like, I'm going to have this with steak.
Yeah.
I'm going to have it with a cigar. I'm going to have it before dinner. I'm just going to sit around and drink this at
like
a party.
My steak wines are wide, though. So it'd be like a bit of blending, like Petit Verdot or Petit Sirah.
So for me, one of those, they always ask, you know, what was the dish or what was the experience? I was in Scottsdale, Arizona, Rancho Pinot Grill with Tom and Krista Kaufman, one of the first really wine-centric, you know, farm-to-table restaurants in Scottsdale. And I had a portobello mushroom with a amazing, amazing wine that was related to this, so to speak. And it was one of those eye-opening things when you're going, look, you know, not only can we... Do we not have to have meat? You know, you prepare something like a portobello and grill it and put it over a bed of greens with a vinegary acid and everything else. And you're like, I'm not missing meat and I could eat this endlessly. And with this pairing, I could drink this endlessly because it plays off all of that.
All right, I'm going to give you one hint. I'm going to give you a hint in this sense.
It's
okay?
My first time back.
All right, so here's the hint that I'm going to give you.
Give me the country.
Which winemakers come to mind that would be on a similar latitude to Rhone?
Geography and everything else, I'm shaking my head. But not...
I'm not wrong, though, right? Very similar latitude.
Close.
Yeah, close.
And definitely...
Definitely in style.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
So this person, the winemaker, is a... 100% a Francophile.
Yes.
You know, they've looked at certain wineries in France as the end-all, be-all, and they were the inspiration. They've established, can I give a couple little hints?
Sure, yeah, okay. I think so.
They've established themselves as having an amazing friendship from the time they were in school to modern day times with the Perrin family, because they really admire
that
style from the Rhone that the Perrin family
is
famous for.
It's like a Tablish Creek.
And,
But that's not the same latitude. Right?
That's not the same latitude.
There is
not
a connection. Yeah,
that's why I was like,
So Nick's given you a bunch of hits. A warmer climate.
Santa Barbara.
New World-ish.
Tablas is Paso. But,
or Paso, yeah.
And they just came out with a
Mondeuse.
They've gone through trying to make single varietal bottlings of like all the Chateauneuf.
All the things,
grapes,
yeah.
All the, you know, those little things that you never really hear about.
Like
that
monster,
with
like a
blend.
That's,
no, that would be fun.
That's a nice track as to what this is. I've always, again, you've got 17 plus different grapes that you can play around with to make Chateauneuf to pop. And in the Rhone, you know, you've always had a lot of different wonderful grapes just because of the fact that with that large variety, you didn't always have to concentrate on monovarietals, because you said, I wanted black fruits, red fruits, darkness, earth, what? Spice, whatever else I needed. This is a backup grape for many, many things. But as I said, it's a varietal that is slightly thicker skin, so you get that little bit of spice and everything else that we had. The color, you know, is one of these things that I adore, because for me, this wine is right through the middle of the goalposts of what I love. As far as, you know, if we think back to some of my favorite grapes, you know, this literally is right in the middle of everything. And that's why I think I love it so much. And then I have a little bit of history, and here's your other hint with this one, which this is probably a little tough for you to grasp, but I was given a very big crash course on this grape when I went to work for a bunch of people that were wine importers when I was working for a coalition from the Southern Hemisphere, and that's all I can give you right now. But this is a very, very significant grape to certain areas in the Southern Hemisphere.
Okay.
So Karen, yeah.
Yeah.
Leading. Well, I would also say that to me when I taste this, I get such a distinctive flavor profile to it that it reminds me why when I describe this grape in a blend, I always use this one fruit description of it. And
what is that fruit description of it?
Well, are you?
I'm not going to remember that you'd said it before. So
I feel that this is why I think Jimmy also would like it. This gives me cherry, Amarena cherry, right there, like your bourbon drinker. And when I use this grape and we describe it, I believe that it's so specific to this flavor profile.
I'm having to have another glass pour.
So we know a lot of things. We know that it is New World,
South American, and not Southern California.
Not Southern California.
It's like a chupacabra blend.
We're going to be heading out. We're hoping to get Arizona Keenan. Soon. You're getting closer.
Is this a McPherson?
Thank God you finally said that.
I'm sorry. Is this a McPherson?
McPherson, Kim, you listen to us?
I apologize, Kim. This is a McPherson.
So, Côte on the Rhone, latitude. Yeah. All right, so we're hitting Kim. And you know why? What did you say in the very beginning? What were the words you said? Elegant.
Elegant, but rustic.
Did you just not describe Kim right there?
Love
everything
Texas.
That he does? Yes.
God,
all right, so we got you there. That was great.
I was dying to say this wine has a little bit of twang to it. I was like, oh, I can't.
We're going
to
give it away.
It's too over the
plate.
See it in my head. I'm like, well, okay.
Let's all, go right. all right. So now get yourself to a grape that's going to give you that dark cherry, that Amarena cherry style.
Nick. So running through the Rhone grapes. Okay, so obviously on the darker fruit of that, we've got your Syrahs,
right.
Then your Carignans, your Mourvedras.
Right.
On the lighter side of it, you know, is all the red fruit stuff. So where are we going? That's
I'm tired.
All right.
You can punt.
I'm blanking on like,
okay,
I can, but
can
I'm going to punt. On the,
okay.
Also
go ahead. You got it. I know you got it.
Also used in rosés.
Often used in rosé.
Yes.
Absolutely.
All right. I'm going to give you one big hint. This is you've had, oh, I lied. Thank you, David. You have had this wine 100% in a bottle of rosé. have not had it 100% in a bottle of red.
A Grenache?
Really close.
Very close. So the wine that she's talking about was from our friend Tinashe from South Africa.
Where he uses this grape, as a blend, both the red and the rosé.
This is the grape that has that huge historical presence in South Africa, because without this grape, they wouldn't have their national grape, because they were trying to create Pinot Noir Pinot Noir. I know. And this is what happens with this grape all the time, because it gets overlooked, because it's a workhorse grape. It's a very durable grape.
Until you said that, I didn't even remember that we had it as 100% in a rosé version. So I think in this instance, Renee, given that it is, we did have a couple of months pause, and this is a wonderful lesson. We tell people all the time, taste. You learn through tasting consistently, and we've had a couple of months off, so your palate isn't quite used to it. You ready? We're gonna reveal it.
And also follow your gut, because you were there. And this is what we always talk about when you second guess things. It is indeed from our friend Kim McPherson. It is part of his single block series, and in this case,
come on. I was going through whatever.
In all fairness, when Zena and I were talking, I said we can do a softball, we can do something that's a little harder.
We're never going to do a softball for me.
But this is the cherry to me. When in Tinashe's his Cab Sav that has the Cab Sav Sanso, and as soon as you said that about the rosé, I mean, this gives me cherry right away. And I'd like to say that I could blind it, but it's so much more difficult when you're in your head and trying to do it. Yeah. But practice. And you were right. I mean,
yes,
we knew that we were throwing you a little bit of a loop there. We knew, we literally said, it's new world that's going to taste old world.
Yeah.
We literally said that. So you were not wrong by saying it, because that's actually the goal of his winemaking.
Yeah.
Or at least,
Debbie Sett's got nothing on these people. I'm going to tell you that right now.
W Sett will try to keep you somewhat to the classics. And here,
they're doing different things. I know.
Just like, wham.
No holds
catch.
I will say that was my one thing with Debbie Sett. Like, the practice exam is like, what are the descriptions of a Bordeaux blend? And you give that in the exam. It's like, what are the description of the Chateau? You're like, oh, come on. Like, block three. And I'm like,
well, but this is so. We've discussed in the past before, one of the things that I have very, very mixed feelings about is when people start to taste wine and they talk about, ooh, look at the legs and what do the legs mean. But this is one of those few instances where when you're stuck between that old world and new world, that might be the one little thing that gives you that little edge to push you or reaffirm what you're thinking. Because,
look at the legs.
There is a significant amount of alcohol in this. It's balanced, but it's there.
Oh, it's
and that's
there.
The thing. It's so married so well with the concentration, with the
steak,
fruit.
Steak, steak. Oh, yeah. Texas, come on.
But this is that thing, that one little thing that might flick that switch from, I want to say it's Rhone, like you said, everything in your head was telling you Rhone, but there was still just, you could see it in your eyes when you're looking at it. There's
something.
A little hesitation. You're like, no, it can't
it's
be.
A little.
And don't you love how Nick pulled that out too? Like we knew that you were going to go old world, because we just felt that it was a little where it was, but the specificity. Thank you. I just like morning wine. Really helped to help me understand that we were tasting at the end of the day still more fruit over terroir. We had the acid
it
and
does.
All those things.
Because I described the fruit first and then everything.
And then, right, so this is a great. So anyhow, we are grateful, Nick, that you bought. We're going to send this straight over to Kim because we all love him.
I don't know that you mentioned the vintage, but it's 2020.
Oh,
so
good
it
point.
Does have 5 years of age.
Yes, does have 5 years. Yep. Thank you, Dave.
Yes.
Appreciate that.
This is the Sanso Farmhouse
Vineyards.
They won't
give me anything.
White House Parker Block, Texas High Plains, our friend Kim McPherson.
I'm going to call this the Clint Eastwood wine, the High Plains Drift.
We loved it. Thank you for joining us for this. Stay tuned. We're going to be back with an episode with Dave and Nick. Cheers to everybody.
Cheers.
And good job.
You did all right. I mean, come on. Old world, new world, you were right there. You were right there. We got it.
It's not like there's a lot of this wine. 280 cases, that's it.
So
this
there they go.
Is pretty niche.
It's not going to be a W set, so you're going to be good.
Thanks.